You are listening to the Frillo Bros Tech Podcast, Episode 74, The Future of Cyborgs and Supercapacitors. Let's talk about supercapacitors.
Supercapacitors. You know what? I got a better idea, James. Let's talk about graphene.
Okay.
All right. These are they're the same thing. That's what the supercapacitors are made of. I thought you were... Did you even read the article?
I watched the video.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's true. That's good. Do you know what graphene is?
Do I know what graphene is?
Yeah.
I know what I think it means, but I have you're thinking of something different than me.
What do you think it is?
I'm thinking of it as a way of displaying data.
Oh.
Exactly.
No. G-R-A-P-H-E-E-N-E? Graphene? Did I spell that wrong? One second. Let me Google that. Graphene.
G-R-A-P-H-E-N-E.
That's what I said. Okay.
It's a very simple carbon polymer, can be used as the basic component of a supercapacitor, an electrical power storage device that charges far more rapidly than chemical batteries. Unlike other supercapacitors, though, graphene's structure also offers a high energy density. It can hold a lot of electrons, meaning that it could conceivably rival or outperform batteries in the amount of charge it can hold.
So do we want to even want to talk about this article? You know what I mean?
You ask me what it means.
Well, no, I do. I know what it means. I was asking you if you knew what it means. I didn't need you to read the article. Jeez. I know.
Go ahead.
Kill me, dog. See, I have a delivery system, okay? Like, I've practiced this. This is like telling a story. And I know it's going to drive some people nuts when I do this sort of thing. But I start with your base. I start with your narrative hook where we talk about supercapacitors. Like, okay, I want to hear about supercapacitors. And then all of a sudden, we change directions to graphene. I don't care about graphene. Then I'm going to give you the chemical structure. Then I'm going to give you some of the cool things that we've known about it over time, some of the new developments. We work all the way back up to the climax of, and this is why it's such a big deal, because it's supercapacitors, and this is what a supercapacitor does. You took out the rise to action. You just cut that all out. You just jump the shark.
Other stuff I want to get to, so let's, you know, I want to get there, man.
All right. Sorry. So I'm going to give you I'm going to give you a little bit of a background.
Ask a question, man. I'm a good student.
So graphene is a carbon structure. Graphene, like graphite, diamonds, charcoal. It's just carbon, which is a big deal.
Carbon polymer, if you will.
That's.
Sorry.
That's one of those words that they use in order to like try to sound cool. One of the things about graphene is a flat structure. It's a hexagonal structure, but it's completely flat. Diamonds are a lattice.
I know what that means.
It's a structure that is regular in all three dimensions. Graphite is a type of lattice where with a diamond, it has very, very, it has very particular, shear planes, which is why diamonds are incredibly strong unless you hit it at that perfect angle to get it on one of its shear planes, and then it breaks off. And that's actually what determines the structure of diamonds, is where you break it on its shear planes. Graphite is a structure where all the shear planes are parallel, which is why when you write with it, they all shear off really, like you give it any friction, all the graphite shears off and just stays on the paper, which is why you have graphite pens, and because they're like stacked layers. Whereas this, there are no shear planes because it's just one plane. And if you can get that one plane, that one sheet, it has some very cool properties. Now, it is an unbelievably tiny little sheet of carbon. It's one molecule thick, so it's not exactly, you know, they talk about how it's like it has the structural, it has a thousand times the strength of the steel of the same thickness. You're like, yeah, that's because you never get steel down to, the problem is the steel at one atom thick doesn't have its lattice structure that gives it any rigidity. So yeah, it's incredibly strong at a sheet thick. It's got cool heat properties. Once again, you're like, well, that's great, but it only matters if you're talking about a sheet of, you know, of one thing. So there's this big thing that's happening, and it's been very difficult to make graphite. Well, the big deal here was there's this dude, is a scientist from UCLA. They basically figured out how to make graphite ridiculously cheaply. You have a solution cool. that has all the needed chemicals. You put it on a DVD drive. You put it into a DVD player. Spin it around. The laser hits it, and you can really literally create a it. It triggers the formation of the sheet, and you can get these like sheets of one layer thick graphene.
Nice.
And so now all of a sudden what's really exciting is the idea of mass producing this stuff is not ludicrous. They found this very easy way of doing it. And what's great about it is we've already always known that there are some very cool things to it. Like it's got really cool electrical characteristics and heating characteristics, which is really important because usually when if you put a charge across something, it heats up. Well, it distributes heat really well. Electrons will pass through it without creating much heat. So it's really great for that. They could actually incorporate it in instead of using copper on your chips in your computer, on your stuff, you can use graphene. So there's all sorts of cool things. But the big thing here is they were messing around and they decided to treat it like a capacitor, and they found when they charged it, it had some pretty cool, it had the very cool characteristic of having all of the energy density of a lithium ion nano sheet of the same thickness and size, but it had the characteristics of a supercapacitor in that you can charge it incredibly quickly, and so this kind of gets in the difference between capacitors and batteries. Batteries store, they separate electrons using a chemical method. So basically chemicals will, lithium ions will separate the electrons from one side to another, and the shift as the electrons pass from the one side back to the lithium ions as they go from the excess electrons, they pass through your light bulb or whatever back to the positive protons. And at that point you lose your charge. But so it has a very high energy density and it has very regulated power. One of the cool things about lithium ion batteries is that they give you 5 volts, like all the, or like, you know, how many ever volt? I think it's like 2, but they're very, very regular. They don't change over time. Where supercapacitors, they charge really quickly, but they discharge just as quickly. So you have to regulate the discharge, and they don't discharge linearly. As they lose charge, the voltage goes down.
That's bad.
Yeah, but it's not, it's something we've always known about capacitors. So it's not,
it's bad.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, well, it's kind of bad. It needs to be fixed, or it needs to be dealt with. So I say all of this to say, so these guys have basically come up with a super cheap way to make supercapacitors that have the same energy density as lithium-ion batteries, except they charge in seconds. And
they also would discharge in seconds as well, or am I missing?
Yes, unless you build circuitry in order to regulate it.
Which you can do, right?
Which you can do very easily, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So,
I'm getting nervous here.
The problem is that circuitry limits the efficiency of the supercapacitor.
Making it potentially cost prohibitive.
Yes. Well, and it lowers your effective energy density. It can carry as many electrons as the lithium ion batteries, but it takes more electrons to get the regular power out.
Okay.
But But that can be compensated for. So if it's only got, let's say it's only got 80%, let's say it's only got 80% of the charge as your lithium ion battery, but all you do is plug it into a wall and unplug it that quick, boom, boom, and you're fully charged, I think we could deal with that. that's something we could, you know, work around.
Could you theoretically charge a capacitor just by plugging it into a wall? Does it work that way?
No, not necessarily. Because what happens is whatever your voltage is. So usually your batteries operate at like 5 volts or 3 volts. That's what they discharge and charge at. These supercapacitors will have their high voltage. So they might have like, you know, in this case for a phone, might have 100 volts stored in the battery in the capacitor. In order to charge it in a second, you'd have to hit it with 100 volts of power. For a very brief time, like that fast, but you'd have to have some sort of a transformer. You'd actually have to have like
what's coming out of my wall.
It's 120 volts AC. You would need 120 volts DC, which is a little bit different. but it's not. It's not impossible. It's not.
I could charge it in my
car. It's not prohibitive. Yeah, and the thing is that you can actually, if you hit a capacitor with full voltage for like half a second, it will charge. If you hit it with half voltage, it will charge over time. So it won't charge, if you were to like,
let's say. What does that mean over time? Like 2 seconds in this example?
Yeah, like 30 seconds. Like it would take a little bit longer, which is like, so like if you were to.
You can see what I'm trying to do, right? I'm trying to figure out like, if I have some low voltage DC outlet in my house for some reason, you know, are we talking about a difference between like a second and 30 seconds or like a second and an hour?
It really depends. It really depends on what you're talking about. But the reality of it is a low voltage, let's say if you have a very high voltage capacitor. So if you have like a 500 volt capacitor and you have a 5 volt source, it'll take a minute or two. it's still very fast.
So here's my other question. Because you know, I instantly think of cars, right? That's seems to make a lot of sense. I mean, don't get me wrong, mobile devices as well. But let's think about just cars for a second here.
Yeah.
You know, so let's just say theoretically we replace I've got a Tesla because that would be awesome. And instead of having their batteries, there's this capacitor dealy bopper inside of it.
Yeah.
Is this something where, how do I want to ask this? So I can see two ways you go about this. The first one is you recharge a battery or a capacitor, super capacitor, a super, super capacitor. Or could it also make sense to, you know, to like just swap them out, like you would change batteries on a phone, that way you're not having to maybe sit around for charging. You literally are just pulling up to a charging station, handing them your capacitor. They give you a new one, you plug it in, you're off and going, so you don't even have to wait the 30 seconds. Or does it charge fast enough where you're just like, no, just it's faster just to sit there and wait the 30 seconds?
This is how it's going to work with cars.
Especially with, you know, a place where, like with cars, you know, theoretically, you could, you know, zoop up the voltage significantly because, you know, it's a commercial and could be a controlled environment type of thing.
This is what's going to happen with cars.
Yeah. Tell me.
You're going to have a charge station that has a, you know, you're going to have big capacity capacitors in your car, like 60,000 volts, like a ton of, that number out there. If you're an electrical engineer, you're like, you're a retard, Matthew. Fair enough. I'm a retard.
Well, what's the, what does the Tesla use or capacity?
They use lithium ion batteries, which.
How many volts are they?
I have no idea.
Okay.
That's a good question. I don't. Well, what's so lithium ion?
Let's say it's that equivalent.
So lithium ion batteries, it doesn't matter what you do, they only deliver 2 volts. So what they have to do is they have to put them in series in order to get the voltage even higher. So I don't know what it is. But it's a lot. But let's say theoretically, hypothetically, we've got a 660 volt capacitor in a series of 660 volt capacitors. What they'll do in the gas station is they will have gigantic, enormous, expensive capacitors in the, you know, in your like little island thing that are like 10,000 volt capacitors, and they will charge those over a couple minute period of time. You'll pull up to your car, you'll plug in this 10,000 volt capacitor into your 660 volt car. It'll regulate it at 660 volts and it'll just dump electrons into your car. Just an enormous flood and you're done. I mean,
so here's a question. Would I actually have to stop, or is there a way to automate this so that I just kind of drive slowly by? And,
probably.
You know, because, like, you imagine you could eventually set it up where it's, like, on a road or on a highway. You just literally drive through a toll. And
You're talking about a tremendous amount of current and voltage, so you'd absolutely have to do it with a wired system. Okay. But I don't see any reason why your Google car – your Google-controlled car couldn't pull down, slow down to about a mile per hour through, like, a tunnel, like a car wash tunnel. A little robotic arm comes out and, you know, and, like, plugs in. And and as you, like, drive at, like, 2 miles, as your car drives itself at, like, 2 miles per hour, and then it just, boom, hits you with a huge jolt of electricity. You've got a full charge. It pulls out, and you keep going. I can't wait for NASCAR to get into this stuff, man. It's going to be awesome.
Oh, dude.
But,
oh, man. That would be amazing.
Yeah. So I say all this. This is like the future of what supercapacitors and electric cars look like. Now, I personally buy into the idea that I really, really, really feel like I still don't think supercapacitors are the silver bullet that we want it to be. I really think that there's going to be a long-term strategy where there is no single technology that answers all of our power needs, because all of these different battery types and power things, they all work in – I think they can work in concert. And I've been saying this for years. People think I'm ludicrous.
Saying it for years.
I know.
10 years.
Yeah. I've been saying it.
I did skip out a word, so you may have missed that Independence Day reference.
Yeah, Randy Quaid, thank you. And that's why this is a safe for work podcast.
Clean
podcast. Some people would be saying, how does that make it? You guys are ridiculous, but we are careful.
Lifetime habit.
How do you say?
Choice.
I don't know. I think what's going to happen is you're going to plug in the car and I think you'll have like a backup lithium ion battery chunk or some sort of a chemical battery that will help regulate things.
Did you say jump or chump?
Chunk. A chunk of your battery. Of your power will be a battery. A chunk will be supercapacitors. A chunk will be how it recuperates and the circuitry that kind of balances and works with all that together. I think there's just a lot of different solutions here that can really, 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 as you engineer these different technologies. The thing is, and how I want to wrap this all around is, this is a very exciting technology, this graphene technology. You're definitely going to see it incorporated more and more. It's sort of like the carbon nanotubes of 2010s. Everybody got all angsty about carbon nanotubes because they're like, the future of everything is carbon nanotubes. Well, like, it's taking longer for all that to pan out than everybody wants because there's no easy way to manufacture long strings of them. If you could make a foot-long string of a nanocarbon tube, I think everybody would be stoked. Well, the problem you're going to have in here is the same thing of graphene is one atom thick. And so if you can't get to the point where you can mass produce these things at volume and at cost, you're not really going to see these graphene supercapacitors go anywhere. But what's very exciting about this is that realistically, you can. They're making some big, big headway. That's what all these articles are. That's the undercurrent of all these articles that people are missing out on, I think, when they talk about supercapacitors and stuff, is the research that these guys are doing isn't how to build supercapacitors. The research they're doing is how to mass produce graphene in a very affordable, effective way. And they're doing flexible, which is very cool. So they're talking about how like they basically will make make a sheet. You have like these super sophisticated lasers that will etch out exactly what you want it to be. You can prefab these things so that you just peel them off, slap them together, put them in a package, put them in a, you know, and so it's one of those things where there's definitely a lot of work to be done. Don't expect this to be in the next revolution, revision of your phone, but in the next 5 years, it's not ridiculous to think that you know, these types of supercapacitors will be, graphene supercapacitors will be, you know, starting to hit the market and starting to, you know, compete with, like, you know, nickel cadmium batteries and actually, like, you know, continue this jaunt forward. The thing is that, and this is what's really exciting, there are other supercapacitor strategies out there that have even higher energy densities than these graphene ones. These graphene ones aren't necessarily anymore, or they're not any more impressive from an energy capacity perspective than other supercapacitors. It's just their manufacturability is so easy, and graphene is just such a, it could be a such a great future material that right now it's very exciting. But I still think that we are on this hunt to figure out the supercapacitor. And very realistically, in the next 5 years, I think you're going to start to see the very beginnings of supercaps getting incorporated into consumer level electronics. So I don't know. It's exciting. It's very exciting.
I agree. Totally agree.